Good afternoon and welcome to Saturday with Cormac O'Hara. Today, are criminals operating with relative impunity in places like Drogheda and Longford? And it's an issue every school and workplace must grapple with, but is it time to change our approach to bullying in this country? That and more, but first the news read by Kieran Evrin. Gurmila Moggins, August Word Gade Fáilte, you're very welcome to the programme. Joining me today is Hildegard Nocton, Fine Gael TD for Galway West and Chair of the Eireachtas Communications and Environment Committee. Thomas Byrne is a Fianna Fáil TD for Meath East and a spokesperson on education and skills. Martin Kenny is a Sinn Féin spokesperson on agriculture, food and the marine and a TD for Sligo Leitrim. And Cormac O'Keefe is security correspondent with the Irish Examiner. A little bit later on, we'll be joined by Stella O'Malley, who's a psychotherapist and author of many books, one specialising in bullying and how to deal with such. And if you have your stories, as I mentioned to Brendan earlier on, 51551 or your observations. But let me start with you, Cormac O'Keefe, if you don't mind, because we have heard various stories concentrated over the last week or a couple of weeks about arson, attempted murder, ostentatious displays of wealth on the streets of Longford and of Drogheda, illicit gains, calls for the cab to be called in to moderately sized towns in Ireland, and the armed response unit of the Garda on the streets of small towns like Longford and Drogheda. What is going on?
Well, I suppose this is not a new thing. We have had this before, where we've had gang feuds that have erupted suddenly. We've had incidents where we've had murders, where we've had incidents before in Limerick in particular, where the ASU have gone in and spent some time dismantling organised crime or trying to suppress it at least. We've had many feuds in Dublin going back a long time. We had the Crumlin Drimna feud that ran for a decade or more. In more recent times, we've had the Kinnan Hutch feud, which had a level of intensity which we had never seen before in terms of the number of murders that had been carried out in a short space of time. I suppose we are seeing a number of feuds. Some of them in Dublin, we've had ones in the Coolock area, we've ones in the Blanchestown area, in the Finglas area, and in Ballyfermot, just to name a few. Mm-hmm. In Drogheda, what appears to be is an implosion in what was an existing gang, a large gang that operated together. And we know from experience when gangs implode, it has devastating consequences. We saw this in the Crumlin Drimna feud, which was an original gang, the splintered. We saw it in the Kinnan Hutch feud, which was a gang
which came to national prominence a couple of months ago. Now, there was a suggestion during the week from a local councillor in Longford that the feud in Longford is somehow related to the Kinnahan gang and that network of criminality in Dublin. Are they just branching out to towns like Longford and Drogheda?
No, I mean, what you have large to mid-level gangs that distribute drugs in towns across Ireland. Everyone is nearly linked to the Kinnahan cartel at this stage because they are one of the main international suppliers of drugs. So almost everybody is linked to them, some gangs more than others. And on the back of the Kinnan Hutch feud, they were forced almost to align themselves explicitly to one side. So the fact that you may have a gang in a midland town that is linked to the Kinnahan cartel is not surprising because they probably get their drugs from that source. But these gangs have huge impact on local areas because you mentioned the ostentatious display of wealth. I mean, that hits communities hard because they see it day in, day out. They see homes being refurbished on a constant yearly basis. I mean, that's a common feature of it. Not only are they refurbished, but they're nearly refurbished every year.
And you say this has been going on for years, but a colleague of mine said, "Ah, yeah, sure, we've seen huge houses in the Longford area for years, and people knew, oh, look, that's because of X, Y, and Z." Almost unspoken, but always with the suggestion that there was some kind of criminality involved. Now, the question is, why don't you bring in the heavy, you know, forces of the state and just rip these guys and their illicit gains out of it? Yeah. Is it that simple?
No, it's not, because you have to go through due process. We have the Criminal Assets Bureau, which has had very significant success nationally, and they have gone into areas outside Dublin for many, many years now, whether it's in Wexford, whether it's in Limerick, whether it's in Cork, whether it's in Galway or Sligo, they have done it.
Can I just stop you there and ask you to listen to this? It's the CAB boss, put on your headphones there, Pat Clavin. He spoke with Richard Curran on The Business just this morning, and he talked about the effect of a community seeing a criminal's assets being seized, even if those assets are relatively of low value. Let's hear what he said about the impact of it.
Some 20% of our cases have been between 5,000 and 13,000. And you might ask, why do you go after those low-value ones? Well, we think that if we go after some of them earlier, we might stop them from becoming tomorrow's godfathers. And that's the reason for it. Sometimes it might be, you know, it might be an SUV that's a few years old that's worth 10,000 euros. But the optic of taking that from the local drug dealer is very powerful in the local community. And the local community really respond to that when they see them being stripped of their assets.
Can I ask the politicians in the panel, why not Hildegard Nocton send in CAB, send in the security forces and bring people before the Special Criminal Court if need be?
And I think that's where we need to take guidance from the Garda Commissioner, and that I'm assured that in relation to Drogheda and Longford, that we need to be taking, I suppose, guidance in relation to the deployment of resources from the chief of the Garda force. Just for example, in Longford, there's 15 arrests have already taken place to date, and they are on top of it. And if they do need any more resources, I know Minister Charlie Flanagan has visited Drogheda, and he's very much on the record as saying if more resources are needed, that they will be provided. But it is up to the Garda Commissioner, who that's his role in relation to the deployment of resources.
In a way, that seems to me divorced from the reality. Can I ask you, all of you, to listen to this email that we've just been sent by a parent? The problem in Drogheda is simple. The drug trade has the perfect selling model. Give the kids credit until they can't pay. Keep doing it until they're scared of their life. Then intimidate the parents to pay the bill, or your child will be maimed or killed, or your home will be burnt. I know I am that parent. I was advised by a Garda that if there was a debt, I should pay. This is not a third-party story. This is what's happening in Drogheda. Simple as that. And we're asking for more Garda resources. And we're being told by a parent that this is how you deal with criminality.
This is where, I suppose, presence as well within the community, and I don't want to, I suppose, refer to any one case there in relation to that, but this is why, I suppose, the Commissioner deployed 25 new Gardaí in Drogheda earlier this month to have more community presence on our streets. And I think that would really help in situations like that on the ground where you have that intelligence on the streets, and that is part of the Commission for the Future of Policing.
That's some of the Gardaí are afraid.
Ambition behind it.
Some of the Gardaí teams are afraid. They are saying, Thomas Byrne, and some of the parents are afraid,
of speaking out. I certainly know some of those parents who are going through that and have gone through that because they come to my clinics in desperation. And it's very difficult to know what a politician says, but what I can say is that some of these criminals are clearly not afraid of the Gardaí. I was in, my brother's a councillor in Drogheda, I was canvassing during the elections one of the days in one of the estates affected. The Gardaí were there almost constantly. And yet, in that particular estate, there was a house burned out the other night. And that was before the extra Gardaí came to Drogheda. I think one of the things that we have to look at as a society is the consumption of drugs. I mean, I've been in, you know, not that frequently in pubs, but I was in a pub recently enough, and the beer garden, quite frankly, was like Amsterdam, with cannabis being smoked openly. And that is happening in, I've seen it on streets as well in recent weeks, in various places, certainly opening doors of houses. Cannabis is being smoked openly. And if we as a society are going to tolerate that, we're going to and it remains illegal and criminal, we're going to tolerate then the criminality.
But there is an ongoing discussion just on that.
No,
point.
That's a separate discussion, and I haven't really concluded on that. But the point is that if we're to accept that cannabis can be smoked openly in the streets, as it has been in many parts of this country, then there's a consequence to that while it remains criminal.
But we've said it on this program. We've said it in this program before that drugs are being dealt quite openly on the streets of Dublin.
Absolutely.
every single morning.
The streets of my constituency as well.
Yeah, everywhere. Well, and this isn't just in you know, Dublin or in hardcore areas. This is in many small towns and rural communities across the whole country. We have this problem. And that lady you read out the email from, her situation is quite commonplace in many of these situations.
The man or
people,
woman, yeah.
Yeah, or whoever, sorry. But the reality of it is that we need almost a twin-track approach. We need the Gardaí to make a very concentrated effort to deal with these particular pockets of problems that we have now. But I think investment in Garda resources needs to be coupled with investment in community resources, mm-hmm. in ensuring that we build community resistance to this sort of thing, that we build a tolerance within communities that, you know, it can't be accepted. For very many communities, they're afraid to speak up. They're afraid to say anything. And in most
what you're all proposing, which is no yes. solace to a parent living in Drogheda or in Longford or any other town now, mm-hmm. I don't want to stymie those overly because I know them.
It's everywhere.
What you're saying in terms of solutions is no solace to a parent living in these towns now, because what you're saying, invest in resources, invest in policing. That will take, with respect, decades.
Well, no, it won't.
It's how it's done, isn't it? It's how it's done. It's having greater cooperation between all the agencies, for example, social workers, and you have this on community intelligence happening right across communities, and that's how you will tackle this, where you remove the fear, where everyone is communicating, the different services who are on the ground, communities who know what's going on and feel safe and feel that they can report these to the state agencies who will work together. And I think, it's not just money, it's about how you allocate those resources and having greater cooperation within our communities.
This parent has told us, I was advised by a Garda that if there is a debt, I should pay. Now, the subtext there is, the Garda is saying, look, these guys will probably hurt you or kill you if you don't pay the debt, so you're better off paying it.
Yeah, well, I think in relation to that, we need to take the fear out of it. And I don't think that is the correct advice if that is true.
But
and
how
I'm not
do
saying
you remove
it's not.
That fear?
But by all agencies working together and all within the community, all people who are on the ground, like social workers, emergency services, people within communities, local residents associations, where you have this intelligence coming to your local guard. And that's what the Commission on the Future of Policing is all about. Yes, we need the resources are there, but it's how it works, how they're deployed on the ground.
We need to take
the lead from the Gardaí, from the commissioner, who is this. He's on his fingers on the pulse in relation to this. I believe he is doing everything that is required, and we need to really take guidance from them. They're on the ground. The Gardaí know what's going on, but it's to have those lines of communication and supports.
In many areas around the country, we don't have the community police service that we once had.
Exactly.
That's the problem. We don't have the local guard that the local community know and trust that has been there for years and that they know that helps train the football team that's involved in the community. We don't have that.
We haven't increased it enough. To over 14,000, which is higher than it has since 2011. That's 1,000 extra Gardaí, and there needs to be an emphasis on community.
What we don't need, actually, is political tit for tat here.
Can I ask you a very specific question?
Okay. In terms of the cab boss, Pat Clavin, was talking to Richard Kerr, and he said, we went after small, got illicit gains. Now, is there an argument to be made to go into small towns and saying, look, we have doubts about the gains that you have got.
Yes, there is
no proof of income behind it. Go and take them out and bring them before the Special Criminal Court. Is that something you'd endorse?
Absolutely. I think what we need to do is I think we absolutely need to use local intelligence to get in very close, to find out who is involved in this sort of thing. In most small towns, they are usually people who have come from outside of it to live in the towns. I know that's certainly the situation in Longford and Sligo, many of the areas where I'm dealing with it. I know in a little town beside me of Mohill recently, we've had this going on, where we've had petrol bomb attacks on houses, cars burned, even shots fired at houses. And local people in the community who are totally innocent have been terrorised by a small group of people.
But then why do you equivocate when I mention the Special Criminal Court? Because if you bring these people who have no qualms would you be happy to bring these people?
I'd be happy to, wherever they need to go, we need to get this
dealt
with.
Well, why has Sinn Féin called for the end of the Special Criminal Court before? Because it was brought specifically to deal with subversives, number one, and also criminal gangs.
Because every
have no problem with plugging or killing someone.
Every agency who looks at this realises that we need to deal with it. The Special Criminal Court, as it stands at the moment, is not the only way of dealing with it. And that's the point we make. We have to get in there to the local communities and deal with this. And the best way of doing that is having a community guard on the ground who's working with the community, who can gather up the information, who knows what's going on, and can feed that up the line and make sure that these people, before they become troop, as the senior person in cab said, before they become a godfather, that before that happens, that they're actually
dealt with. Well, it seems to me there are an awful lot of godfathers in the country at the moment. I'll come to you. Let me read some of the comments first of all. 51551, we've got an awful lot of them. Luke says, Cormac, communities don't need an EastEnders style analysis. They need a massive crackdown by the security services on these criminals and their illicit gains. Ronan in Limnach says, a Cormac cab will solve all in Longford and Drogheda if the government has the courage, the will and the desire. Margaret says, do cab and revenue or social welfare officers follow up with tradesmen that have carried out extensive work to properties, i.e. to install presumably for large amounts of cash, windows, building extensions and fit out sheds and so on. Dave in Cork says, if you legalise cannabis, you strip the criminals of a major revenue stream, you get to regulate the strength of the THC and you raise taxes for the state to tackle hard drugs. What about that?
Well, look, there's certainly arguments forward, I'll accept that, and I haven't concluded my view on it, but the difficulty of course is that when you legalise it and you have a certain level of THC, then the criminals come in with a stronger version of the drug, and that's I think what's happened in some jurisdictions. But the truth is that while we talk about Drogheda and Moneymore, and there was awful crime in Drogheda this week, and in fact there have been houses burned out in Drogheda where people have had no connections whatsoever to the criminal gangs, but the truth is that cannot be divorced from somebody who's snorting cocaine in the toilet of a pub, or someone who's smoking hash on the streets of a town, or somebody who's standing outside a supermarket dealing in drugs. These are all connected, and we as a society need to know this. And by the way, I support the Special Criminal Court, but the Criminal Assets Bureau, which don't forget was brought in by Fianna Fáil in opposition in 1996 after the murder of Veronica Guerin, John Donoghue at the time brought it in from opposition, that is the most effective tool. And if they're properly resourced and if they can do it, the burden of proof for the Criminal Assets Bureau is much lower than a criminal conviction, and it arguably has more effect because some of these criminals don't seem to fear jail either.
And Nora Owen would say she had a thing or two to do with that.
Well, she was the Minister for Justice at the time, and she accepted the bill that Fianna Fáil brought in at the time. But absolutely.
Can I ask Cormac O'Keefe, since you're a security correspondent with the Irish Examiner, about fear and living in fear and communities living in fear, and the fear of talking about out or giving information to the Gardaí or any other agency, state agency, in relation to criminality or criminals. Is that a real thing?
This has been a reality for a long, long time. You know, there's communities out there that are intimidated. They are afraid to talk to guards. They won't talk to guards because they know if they do, it will get back to the person concerned and their house could be burnt down, their car could be damaged, they could be assaulted, their children could be assaulted. And that is an issue that has been flagged by groups like Citywide going back a decade. Okay, it came to the fore during the Kinnan-Hutch feud when we saw the impact in the North Inner City. But this is replicated across largely working class communities in particular, not just in Dublin, but in Drogheda, in Longford, in Limerick, in Waterford, in all sorts of places. So that is a real issue, and trying to address that is not simple. Unfortunately, it will take time. There are no quick fix solutions to this. Guards are operating from a low base now. They were decimated during austerity. Okay, that's not the fault of the current government. Along with social services, along with youth services in these areas, community service, they were all decimated. And guards would tell you that it will take years just to get back to their original state.
Okay. Don't give me a glib or quick answer on this. But is there anywhere in the country safe from this type of criminality or drug taking?
No, there's not, because there's huge money in drugs. Huge money in drugs. And they will fight with each other to assume control over that. So no, there isn't. There can't, because there's such huge money. There's huge demand there. And the demand is only increasing over time. So you have more people who are willing to consume. So if the demand is there, the supply will always be there. And the police, like in every jurisdiction across the world, can only do so much.
OK, 51551. We're going to talk about bullying after the break.
Email saturday@rte.ie. Saturday with Cormac O'Hara on RTE Radio 1.
Now, if cannabis is so widely used and tolerated in Ireland, surely the obvious thing to do is legalise and tax it, as a growing number of states are doing, says Jay Walsh in Galway. And a texter says, they send young guards to these towns. It's madness. Would Kerry or any other county send juniors to play in an All-Ireland final? Poor judgment, in my view, says that texter. 51551, I'm joined by Hildegard Nocton of Fine Gael, Thomas Byrne of Fianna Fáil, Martin Kenny of Sinn Féin, and Cormac O'Keefe of the Irish Examiner. And we're joined on the line by Stella O'Malley, who's a psychotherapist and author, because this week, as you know, two young boys were convicted of the murder of Anna Creagel. Now, during the trial, you will have heard the prosecution referring to bullying suffered by Anna Creagel online and in real life and the effect that that had on her. Now, it's begun since a wider discussion on how we deal with bullying and the effects of bullying and how we support the victims of bullying and how we as parents and teachers and managers and leaders deal with bullies. Now, because you can deal with it now properly, or as so many of you have been telling us, online, by text and an email, deal with the effects of it now or for years later or even decades later, you will deal with that. And that is the case, Stella O'Malley, as a psychotherapist. You've seen the effects, haven't you?
Yeah, the effects can be very profound. They can last right up through the entire adulthood of somebody's life when they've been bullied as a child. And it's unbelievable how much it kind of, it disturbs the psyche. It really goes deep. It's very, very humiliating, and it's probably somebody's darkest period of their life. And in one way, they don't want to talk about it, they don't want to think about it, they don't want to admit it happened, or it's even happening. Mm. They don't even want to say to their parents, not because they're not close to the parents, they just don't want to bring it up.
And is bullying, is it prevalent or is it widespread?
I think it is. I don't think there's proper data to show us whether it's more prevalent now than it was when I was a child. But I don't see any reason to see that it's any different, that still children bully other children, and they do it to what I would argue would be a very dark, really, in a way that just adults, they do bully, adults do, but they don't seem to go as weird and warped.
But it's a hard one to define, in a sense, isn't there? There's because some person's horseplay or fun or jibing or slagging or whatever is another person's bullying. Am I right there?
You are right. They say it's repeated aggression from somebody with more power to somebody with less power. But I do think that for some people, slagging is considered bullying, and for some people, it's literally fun. And they say, you know, if the other person is laughing, if the person you're laughing at is laughing as well and could go back, could retort without it looking aggressive, well, then it probably is funny. But if the other person isn't laughing, and if they couldn't say, well, look at yourself, and that would seem an aggressive retaliation, well, then that's bullying. I think we kind of know it when it's crossed a line.
Do we, though? Because I could be mocking Thomas Byrne here right now, and he'd laugh back. But then after the programme, he'd go in the toilet and start crying. And I'm never...
I go to your superior.
But I'm never to know. Do you know what I mean?
You are right. And there is a certain person who does feel that they're being bullied, and somebody else wouldn't feel that they were bullying at all. And that can be very tricky. But I think a lot of the times the bullying that I encounter is out and out proper. Nobody would argue that this isn't bullying. Mm-hmm. And what happens is usually the target has been dehumanised, so that the bullies aren't really perceiving that person as a proper person. They've kind of out-othered them into something kind of slightly different, that they don't get it. They're thinking to themselves, the bullies are thinking, no, they're just different than us. And we're allowed to say this about them because they're odd, they're strange, they're weird.
Does that mean...
And they give themselves permission.
Does that mean then that there is a type of person that is usually bullied, or can you even ask that question?
I don't know if you can, but I do know that I've seen, and I've kind of studied it quite a lot, there's three types of, I would say, targets that somebody would be targeted easier. The quickest way to know whether you'll be a target is, are you different? And especially around children, they look for difference and they're very quick to target difference. Now, that difference can be the best part of your personality, but you're still targeted because you're different. But there's also three types of target insofar as there's a passive target, which would be the classic target. And Ted Bundy used to say that he could spot his targets by the way they walked down the street. And what he meant was there's a certain type of docile, gentle, passive, not a fighty type, not a feisty type. It's easier to target that person because they won't fight back. You know, I knew a person, and he's 6'2", and he used to get bullied, and I think he's about 48 now. But he said every single day I was going to school, my mother would say to me, "Now you're to fight back." And he said, "I'm 48. I have still never thrown a punch in my life. It's not in me." So that person would be much easier to bully than somebody who'll fight back. And you can, the bullies, and I think anybody would spot that passive gentle type out of a lineup, like quite quickly you'd spot them. Then the other two types would be the kind of accidental target where something happens, it's something funny or something silly, like a boy gets his trousers pulled down and he gets a name and the name sticks. And it's kind of an accidental thing that has happened and it's just kind of grown legs because people think it's funny and people are being mindless. And then the most probably difficult target, and I would be this person, so I'm kind of flagging myself by saying it, is the provocative target, where they provoke people, they rattle cages, they annoy people, and as a result they get targeted for that. And that's the trickiest and the hardest one to get out, and because they are rattling cages.
They're the three types that you've mentioned. Can I throw this open to the panel? And you stay with me, Stella, if you don't mind, because I'm going to pick your brain in just a second again. But Patricia Hildegard texts us and says, "When my daughter was bullied at school and finally refused to go in anymore, the doctor put bullying on the sick note. The school principal called the doctor and demanded to know how he dare do that. I took my daughter out of the school." It's very difficult for people to deal with an allegation of bullying if there isn't a proper procedure in place.
Yeah, right? And there needs to be proper procedures, and the Department of Education have actually asked for all schools to have an anti-bullying policy and to publish it on their websites. And I know there's a lot of work taking place across primary and secondary in relation to bullying. Even cyberbullying now, it's gone online now, as we know. And there's lots of programmes there. There's a really good website, webwise.ie, for teachers, parents and students, with really good advice in relation to how to deal with it. And also tackling cyberbullying is another website. But to answer your question, there needs to be clear procedures within schools and for pupils to and students to report it, and also to deal with it within the classroom situation as well.
Yeah, I don't think you're the education spokesperson for Fianna Fáil. I don't think you can eliminate bullying, can you?
Well, look, possibly not, but I suppose we've had the anti-bullying strategy since, I think, 2013, and the stuff that Hildegard's talking about is ongoing for the last number of years. We still have very high profile examples of bullying, and you'll have lots of texters, I'm sure, coming in with their examples. Yeah. We have phones in certain schools just absolutely wholesale. People can use them to whatever degree they want. Fianna Fáil have proposed that phones be banned from schools up until junior cert and take that choice away from schools. And some schools are actually changing now, where they had phones allowed and now they're not allowed.
But what good will that do?
Because a huge amount of the bullying that I've come across can happen in class, can happen in terms of messages and photographs being shared, can happen in relation to teachers as well, where there can be recordings of teachers done and put in Snapchat, etc. That has happened.
Without doubt, but you're not actually dealing with the problem there, are you?
No, you're not. And what I think in terms of the anti-bullying strategy, the action plan that was developed in 2013, we're now 6 years on from that and a few years on from the implementation of it. We still, as I said, have very high profile examples. We've never talked as much about diversity and difference as we've ever had in this country, and still we hear from Stella that difference is still targeted. So clearly we're not doing something right on that.
I don't get that, because everybody's different, sure.
It's where you don't go with the herd. I mean, you know, you're a broadcaster, you will go with the broadcasting herd. You won't be totally different on this programme. You're not going to start effing and blinding, etc.
An ostensible difference.
A noticeable difference. And we are talking about diversity. We have well-being at junior cycle. We have a huge amount of time devoted to well-being. And, you know, it's hard to see, are the results coming through if this is still happening? We're not going to prevent it all.
Yeah.
We're not going to prevent all badness, absolutely. And we can't put everything on the state or everything on teachers either. Parents have to take responsibility here to know what the kids are up to too. But I think it probably is time maybe for someone like the Education Committee to look at the anti-bullying strategy.
Well, a lot of it will come down to parents, Martin.
As a parent, I'm very conscious of that. And one of the things that I think really we have to try and do is, and it comes back to the discussion we had earlier about community resources and all of that, is we have to find a way of building the capacity within our young people to be able to call it out. to be able to say, look, it's not fair that you're going to bully Mary, or it's not fair that you're going to bully Jack. I'm not letting you do that. And we have to build the capacity within her to make that an acceptable thing to do. Now, when I talk to my teenagers, they tell me, look, you wouldn't do that. You wouldn't do that because you'd be bullied as well if you'd done that. So we need to be able to build that capacity and that resilience.
Okay, that's great.
Some young people have it.
How do you do that?
And one of the ways we can do that, I think, is, you know, while there's a lot of programs going on in schools, I think really around, you know, particularly the programs we have with children, with through the GAA, through various sports organisations, through all of those things, because that is in a different environment to the strict educational environment.
Yes.
And I think there's work to be done there as well. And in fairness, those organisations, the GAA, all of those sports organisations are all up for that and want to be part of that and recognise that there needs to be something done about it, because they see it happening. Now, parents also have a responsibility, and have a responsibility to work with their children and understand them and have a good relationship with them and be able to communicate with them. And one of the things that I find is you go to a football match and you stand on the sideline and you hear parents roaring abuse at other children, which isn't fair and which is given very bad example. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we as a society have to understand that it's not just the children that do the bullying. Sometimes it's the adults as well.
That's a point. Can I just say
aren't on the sports teams as well, because sometimes someone who's on a soccer or a football team or a hurling team can get by quite easily and they're part of the group, they're not different actually. They're part of a team.
It saves them.
Yeah.
We are inundated with texts about this. 51551, a texter says some of the biggest bullying in schools comes from teachers picking on students and nothing gets done. Is that a problem?
Well, certainly I've had some parents come to me with that. I can't say this is a widespread problem, but I do know that if you have a complaint, obviously if the teaching council in terms of a teacher, but in terms of how the school deals with anything, you have very little recourse actually, because the government have promised a legislation called the Parent and Student Charter Bill, and that's still at draft stage really. Mm-hmm. So it hasn't gone anywhere. That needs to be implemented as much, because certainly parents do feel in any dealings with schools, but if they're not getting somewhere with a school, which in fairness, most schools try their best, let's be honest, most principals try their level best. But there are definitely some examples of bad
stories.
There are always stories in every sector of society.
Or a cafe, and somebody at the table will always have a story about the teacher who was a little bit nasty, or who picked on the vulnerable child, or who picked on the quiet child. I know you trained as a teacher. I mean, you've heard stories like that too, I'm sure. I mean, it's bullying if a child does it, but not if a teacher does it.
Okay, and I suppose that you're coming from the perspective of a student, be it a couple of years later or within the school system. Can I just say, in relation to all of this, there needs to be a culture within a school, from the staff, the principal down, the board of management, who has set out this anti-bullying strategy. And there are lots of resources out there, and they are being rolled out. And we need also courses for parents in relation to the online space, because this is a huge issue now, that it's not, in my day, I'm starting to say that now, I could go home and that was the end of it, you know, if you were being bullied or targeted. But now it's on your phone, it's online, and we need to resource parents as well in relation to how do they protect their children online, how do they talk to children before they even get a phone or any of these devices, because that's the key time to start talking to them about how to protect themselves online. So that's the societal, the school approach. Also, as legislators, we have a role to regulate social media companies, and that's what we're doing in my own joint ROC, this Committee for Communications, and Minister Richard Bruton is going to publish the heads of a bill in relation to regulating online social media companies, where they will be made to take down harmful content, and that there will be a regulator there where people can first raise the issue with the whether it's Facebook, Google, whatever, raise the issue with them. And if they're not getting any recourse there, they will be able to go to a regulator. And this is what Minister Richard Bruton is putting forward, an online safety commissioner.
So there's already a bill there to do that.
Which will
has a bill there to do that. Yeah, it's before the committee.
Yes,
and we would encourage that bill would be progressed, and that the government would do whatever it feels necessary to add to that where necessary. Right. But coming up with a whole new bill, I think, is wasting time.
Can I just say, in relation to that bill, Senator Freeman has a bill, and the minister will be looking at all of these in relation to the best robust legislation that is not going to infringe.
Then I'll bring in Stella O'Malley.
You mentioned a bill there, heads of bill. We still have the Parent and Student Charter Bill, heads of bill from 2 years ago. None of this has been made law, and it's all very well ministers making announcements when there's a bit of moral panic and there's a bit of coverage in the media and then not being followed up. And what has to happen is we all have to follow up. And let's be honest, we're saying parents have to take responsibility, but us as legislators have to take responsibility to get these these laws pass, and that requires the government to push these things.
Which we are
and
doing.
So, I'm told
which
that some of the texters are agreeing with Thomas Byrne.
Yeah, we work together on it. Yeah.
A texter, Stella O'Malley, listen to some of these, and I'll ask you a quick question, a fundamental question afterwards. My grandson was bullied and taunted in school. He eventually retaliated, and now he's been expelled due to the ongoing consequences. Previously, the principal has suggested we take him out of the school as nobody liked him, and that's in inverted commas. We now have to fight on his behalf. Disgraceful. A texter says, my daughter was bullied by her teacher in junior infants. All her self-esteem was taken. 20-odd years later, she has never regained confidence. The consequences of bullying don't go away. How do you balance, Stella O'Malley, if you're giving advice to parents, that you want to tell them that bullying is not acceptable, tell your child that bullying is not acceptable, but that you have to accept a certain amount of slagging or horseplay as part of development in childhood? Where is the balance there?
Well, it's incredibly tricky because we do enjoy fun and we do enjoy having a laugh, in inverted commas, and yet some people enjoy it a lot less than others, and some people don't like teasing at all. And I think it's fair enough that you're entitled to not want to tease and not want it. I have noticed my own children have been brought up in this culture where you really don't tease very much, and I think those policies are slowly but surely getting through. You can just see a kind of certain po-faced reaction from my children and their friends if I say something what I would consider funny. And me, having written a book on bullying, should know better.
No, but you're saying that teasing isn't allowed at all. Surely that's not helpful.
I worry that a darker thing is going underground and it's going more toxic. I think it's very interesting that everybody's talking about bills and you know, proposals and things like that, when actually the real thing is that it's you know, the parents who are in the car listening and driving home with their children, and they hear them kind of dismiss other children as weird or odd, or and they are the children who have been bullied. Our children, as in our in Ireland, children are being bullied in mild ways, we think, and when they are actually experiencing it, it's incredibly difficult. As the texters have said, it can leave a very long wound. I think the bullies don't realise the impact they're making, and they dismiss the impact they're making, and they're talking about bullying out there when it's actually in here.
Well, some of the bullying is out there in cyberspace, and that was mentioned. How do you regulate that, I wonder?
Yeah, I would like it if we could make complaints easier. I think, you know, so many parents, and they've never gone near their children's cyber world and virtual reality, and then suddenly they have to try and make complaints and get images taken down, and they don't know how to do it, and it's really tricky, and it's not made easy, and they don't get replied to very quickly. And that I would like more regulation on that, and I do like the idea of basically there being some sort of regulation around the online world under 18, that it's a very different world, that they have to have age verification and things like that to be able to kind of access certain things, so that it's not so free and easy, because it's too easy for children to access really dark, disturbing images. And I think it's impacting their minds. And what they're doing is they do a lot of photoshopping with these weird images. And it turns really horrible if you're a 14-year-old and you're being sent images that are really grotesque. But I just think that those children shouldn't have access to them.
Yeah. I'll read a few more texts if you don't mind. Ursula Curtin in Limerick says, adults, not exclusively parents and teachers, need to call out bullying in society as a whole. Too many turn a blind eye and a deaf ear. Bullies aren't born, they're made, says Ursula. Sean says, hi there, the media could help with the issue of bullying by calling it out for what it is, abuse. Start referring to the perpetrators as abusers and create a stigma around them. It might help to deter others from such a toxic path. And that's the word, I think, that Mary McAleese is using the Daily Mail today. And Sean finishes by saying, I still suffer from the long-term effects of this abuse over 40 years ago. Is there a wonder... People might throw their eyes to heaven at this question, Cormac, but you cover crime. Is there a link, I wonder, between the development of the child and crime in later life?
Oh, well, that's a difficult one to draw links with. To come back to the issue, as I'm a parent myself and just listening to the other people, I think parents are grappling when something like this happens. When it happens to them, immediately they want to know, well, will the principal be responsive to my concerns, at the very least. and hopefully will take them seriously. Now, it's not an easy job for principal. God knows they have a huge amount of demands on their time. But I think we have seen again very recently the devastating impact that this can have if left unchecked. The one of your texters that mentioned there about that it should be called abuse, and it just in my mind, it's the media have been criticised for a long time for using the word child pornography when the word they should use is child abuse mm-hmm. imagery. And I suppose it makes you think then that this is a far more serious issue than maybe that
the words we use
that
around
the words
it.
We
but,
use.
But Dr. Geoffrey Shannon, I saw during the week, he's the state's special rapporteur on child protection. He says that a clear legislative framework should be introduced compelling schools to have a strong disciplinary code for tackling bullying. Now, can I assume, I wonder, Hildegard Nocton, that the reason that hasn't been done so far is that it's very, very difficult to define what bullying is in a teenage...
Yeah, but in any sphere, but I think, as just like you've said there, that if a child in a school is feeling that they have been targeted for whatever reason, and as was discussed earlier, the bully might not think they're bullying. So that needs to be dealt with. Whatever your perspective is within a school, it needs to be addressed. And also, just in relation to that whole issue about how we treat others and putting yourself in someone else's shoes, you mightn't think, it might be just slagging or teasing, mm-hmm. but for somebody else, it could be really, really serious.
What if they're overly sensitive?
That's where we need to have these discussions. And I think the whole, I know this is an overused word, but it's really important, the whole thing about empathy. What does that mean? It's putting mm-hmm. yourself into somebody else's shoes. And that might be okay for you if I say something to you, you're okay with it, but somebody else, it's really going to destroy them and really devastate them. And we need to be having those conversations in our SBHE classes, in our Stay Safe programs, in the schools. And that's where I talk again about the culture. It's very difficult. Some bullying is so subtle, and we all know it as adults. It's so subtle. And it's very hard to prove it, to define it.
People are talking about isolating.
Yes, yeah. It's very subtle. You can't prove it. So we need to talk about it and talk about every aspect of it and how we feel. And some people are going to react differently. And that's where this whole area of empathy is so important, right from adults as well as children. We all need it. Yeah.
You can't just allow, say, preteen or early teen kids onto a phone and not supervise it and not be looking regularly at what's on the WhatsApp groups and what's on their various social media, and particularly younger kids as WhatsApp groups. You simply cannot handle it over to them, because there's a world of absolute horror if they want awaiting them. We have to say as well, there are organisations around the country who are going around to schools providing unbelievably important advice on social media and online bullying. And I have to say, sometimes the meetings aren't overwhelmingly attended. And I have to say, I've gone to some of these meetings and the advice I've got is absolutely fantastic, and it's changed.
So
the way
you're saying parents are laissez-faire?
No, I'm not saying that, but I'm saying that some of the meetings I've gone to haven't been hugely attended. Yeah. And I think some of the information that you get, like, for example, you know, we said, oh, we'd never allow YouTube on the television, but actually it's the best thing you can do, because at least you can see what the hell they're watching rather than sitting on the phone or their own earphones.
A texter says, in the anti-bullying programme, attention is focused on the person who is being bullied. Even your speaker gave profiles of children who is being bullied. That child is ashamed of themselves as those talks go on to the classroom. The stress has to be on what is wrong with the bully. I'm a teacher and a parent of a person who has had his life destroyed by bullies. It's very difficult to know what you say to somebody in that situation.
Very difficult. And I mean, the bully is at the centre of this. And that's the problem, that the bully could be our child as well. Mm. You know, it's not, we all think, you know, we're afraid our child will be bullied. There should be equally as much emphasis from a parental point of view that you're afraid that your child could possibly be the bully. Mm. And that's something that we have to watch out for. I think the consequence of this you mentioned earlier, one of the big consequences of we see in CAMHS, children end up depressed. Children end up that they need help, and our service again is very sparse in regard to that. So I think, you know, we need to understand that it's not just a problem within the family. It can grow into a very big problem, and a lot of these are all health issues and they're all linked, and if we can get it right one place, we need to get it right everywhere.
I think if you ask the Minister for Education about what's happening, and they'll talk about well-being at junior cycle, oh, this is fantastic, but what my worry is that well-being has become a buzzword to allow people, we're doing this, but actually I think we need to look at what has been taught of well-being. How well is it being done in some schools and how badly maybe in other schools, and have a full review of this and what Dr. Shannon said in terms of a legislative framework to see, are we actually doing everything rather than just talking and using buzzwords?
Okay, can I ask Stella to give us you'll have the final word, you're the expert in this, top tips to react to bullying. What do you do?
I think an upstander culture needs to happen, and I think it will happen in the wave of things like last week, where children are told, especially children, that they have to stand up, and if they see bullying, that they don't laugh at the joke, that they don't join in, the pylon. Like, if you look at, you know, Denmark in the Holocaust, 90% of the Danish Jews came out with their lives, because in Denmark they had this very strong upstanding, or they certainly did then, upstanding culture of you look after your neighbours. And some schools are really strong on bullying because they have a strong upstander culture, and that's what you send your children to school. You say, was anybody left out today? Were you smiling? And is anybody who's left out, did you ask them to join in and play with you? That you put it up to your children not to be a bully, and then you're creating, you're doing your little bit of good in the world.
Yeah.
And you're also finding out what's going on in school. It's very, very important that we all take a part of it. Most people who've been bullied will at some point in their life be accused of being bullied, of being the bully. It very often kind of interchanges. It's not as if half the people are villains and half the people are targets. It changes and it mixes. And
is bullying addictive?
It's very hard. Well, some people are addicted to the power of bullying. There's no doubt about that. And they fall into it and they get their power swipes. An awful lot more people are very complicated and they fall in with one group. And are they the bullies? They're certainly not the leaders of the bullies, but they're joining in.
Okay.
And if we could get them, if we get the joiner inners and get them to turn into a more upstanding kind of attitude rather than the bystanders, we'd really knock this on the head. And okay, that's a cultural thing.
Okay, look, Stella O'Malley, thank you very much indeed for sharing your expertise. You've written the book Bullyproof Kids and Fragile, and they're well worth a read. I should say that bullying information for parents and students is available on the Department of Education and Skills website, education.ie. It seems to me, doing these programmes over the years, there is so much of a focus in education on subjects that will bring us economic prowess, but very little focus, I think, on developing the child more holistically.
The Department of Education and teachers would say differently, but what I'm concerned about is just the quality, and that it's standard across the country as to what has been taught in terms of wellbeing at junior cycle, in terms of the other aspects of that. What is there? And I think it can be variable enough. But it is really about, we can't just keep throwing everything at schools and everything at teachers. There's clearly an important part to play, but we all have to play that part.
Look, I'll take a very quick break. Break back in a minute.
Email saturday@rte.ie. Saturday with Cormac O'Hara on RTE Radio 1.
Now, can I ask you all about the school in Greystones in Wicklow, which has decided to introduce a gender-neutral school uniform policy, as was reported in the Irish Times during the week, following proposals from the Students' Council, and they had staff meetings and meetings with parents and so on. Should this be rolled out, Hildegard Nocton, to all primary schools in the country?
Well, I think it's a matter for the school itself, and that's actually how operational day-to-day matters work within schools. It's not the department or government stating what happens. It's up to every school themselves to decide. Well, I think in relation to this, no matter what the decision is, I think it was a good democratic process for students. I understand now, I'm open to correction, that it came from the students originally, but they went through their student council and they discussed it with the Parents Association and the Board of Management, and it was through that, I suppose, process. And I think it's a good system for young people to learn how to create change in society in the future when they go out.
And the process was good. The Times reported the school will allow boys to wear skirts or girls to wear trousers from next September. Is that the space that all primary schools should be in, I wonder?
Well, I think a lot of primary schools are grappling with the issue of gender identity. There's no question about that. And a lot of them are bringing in gender neutral uniforms or toilet policies, which are causing, you know, no fuss whatsoever. And I don't know whether there are other schools who've done this. And I have to say, the way the school has dealt with this is just absolutely fantastic, where everybody's working together with
it. How do you deal with a school then that where some parents may not be comfortable with it?
Well, I think what I would say to anyone who's not comfortable with this really is that there's always a child at the centre of these stories that's not part of the newspaper story. Mm-hmm. So undoubtedly this school here and many other schools were dealing with children who are gender identity issues. And these are issues which I'd say have never really been obviously to the focus in society, but have always really been there. So we have to think of the child. A lot of schools are bringing in tracksuit policies. Quite frankly, tracksuits are much more practical when you're getting up every morning in terms of ironing shirts or ironing skirts or whatever. Tracksuits, I have to say, I'd be an advocate for. Our school has brought in a tracksuit policy. Yeah. I don't know what the reason was, but they're definitely handier.
A parent said to me during the week, this is crazy.
But the
girls should wear skirts and boys should wear... What do you say to that parent if that parent had an issue in a school?
I think it should be the school's policy. I think it actually should be the state's policy. My kids go to school where they don't wear a uniform. I think schools that do have uniforms, it should be they could just wear tracksuits or trousers, whatever they want. And seeing girls having to wear skirts going to school in all sorts of weather just seems crazy. Mm-hmm. That's mandatory. I don't understand it. And I think it should change.
A parent said, we were discussing this, that it is... one opinion I heard was that it's too young in primary school to let a child discover or try to discover anything about gender identity. Wrong or right?
Yeah, young children, I don't know what age you come to where you start to grapple with those things, but probably primary school is a little bit premature for that to be happening. In some cases, I don't know. I think the general idea of a policy around it would very much be up to each school. I think schools are becoming more accepting of difference and, you know, understanding that there has to be at least space for children and for their parents to make decisions.
Why do you think it's a little bit premature in primary school?
I'm not sure, I'm no psychologist. I don't know at what stage in a life cycle a child starts to deal with those issues.
Would that be your instinct?
My instinct is that it probably wouldn't be in primary school. It would be possibly maybe in the very late years of primary school that we start to look at that.
Yeah.
But I do think that
what do you do in
as has been said
where
to others,
a child says, I feel I'm in the wrong gender. I've been assigned.
If the uniform in the school is causing an issue for the child, I think there should be the freedom there for the child to wear a different uniform if that's what they
I'd
want to do.
What I'd say is that by the time it comes to the uniform stage or talking to the school stage, that child, and there's not a huge amount of children in this situation, but that child is probably and their parents have probably gone through a whole lot of other issues and chats and discussions and maybe gone to psychologists or I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd say the uniform is probably almost the last thing on the agenda there.
Yeah.
And while, you know, it's certainly society's changed and all that, there is no doubt that primary schools are dealing with this issue around the country at the moment.
Well, look, apropos of our earlier discussion regarding bullying, we got a text that says, the motto in my class has always been, let not my fun be another's torture. Read this out, it will help, says that texter. And that's done. I would like if everyone lived by that motto. Anyway, Mwichus, La Hildegard Nocton, Thomas Byrne, Martin Kenny, Stella O'Malley, agus Cormac O'Keefe. Gudji, an Sáhrin Seohogan, aga hian na chlog, banagi soltas an Jenna Seachtana.
Saturday with Cormac O'Hara was produced by Tom Donnelly. Research was by A.B. Philbin-Bowman. The broadcast coordinator was David Phelan and Ruth Kennington was on sound.